Just to finish up on this case, so the way that Rich approached this lady, which is really trying to follow the protocol guidelines in terms of when to do the EFs and when to stop and start, bottom line, is that what oncologists are be doing hell right now?
Well, you know, it's a tough situation because there is a black box warning on use of trastuzumab about cardiotoxicity, and yet there are not firm guidelines really in place for how to monitor patients. In Washington, they call this the unfunded mandate, and it's a challenge for docs in the real world. I think there are a couple points to be made. I mean, the first is clearly these patients merit cardiac surveillance. And while there have been efforts to look at predictors of drops in ejection fraction and heart failure, it seems like borderline ejection fraction at baseline, age, and perhaps pre-existing hypertension all stand out as predictors of trastuzumab-related cardiomyopathy. The patient still needs surveillance irrespective of those risk factors. And so we check it at baseline after the anthracycline-based chemotherapy if they get it, again after 3 to 4 months of the taxane trastuzumab combination, and then at some point again, if you remember it, is sort of my practicing algorithm. Having said that, it must be said that these safeguards were put in place when we did not know what the clinical efficacy of trastuzumab was going to be. And the challenge that arises is in cases like this where you have a high-risk breast tumor, you are trying to bring important therapy to bear on the patient's disease, and when you are trying to combat these sort of drops in ejection fraction of really unknown clinical significance. And that's where it's really tough to be a clinician because there aren't hard and fast rules. And to the extent that there were rules in the trial, the rules there were based on not knowing that trastuzumab was going to be a life-saving drug for women to the degree that it is. And so the questions we get all the time at tumor boards and other places are, the ejection fraction goes from 59% to 48% or 42%, and maybe they were a little short of breath, but you're not sure. So this is why, obviously, clinical medicine is so fascinating. I think you have to be respectful of the real issue of cardiotoxicity, as Dennis has mentioned. And at the same time, you have to try and get some treatment in as long as you're helping the patient in the aggregate. And for many patients, you know, with these asymptomatic drops, it's really hard to know exactly where that inflection point is.
Dr. Earhart?
I think Dr. Steingart raised an important point. When we think about patients in an adjuvant setting, for the most part, these women are going to do well. And I wonder for those women that are sort of borderline for Herceptin, that I may drop their EF over time from maybe they started at a 70% and they may be hovering at 50%. And I think, well, you're 45 years old. When you enter that high-risk cardiac arena, what am I doing to you in terms of being able to withstand your 70s and your 80s? And I wonder, Dr. Steingart, is there any data that we can extrapolate from the non-cancer population in terms of women that enter their 70s with EFs at 70 versus entering at 50, right, how much more trouble are they in?
That's a great point. If I were to take a woman, just to make this clearer, with a 70% ejection fraction and put her through a rigorous training regimen, her ejection fraction would fall to 55% or 50%. So that number can be very deceptive. And as a matter of fact,
can you explain that a little bit?
What's hyperdynamic?
The physiology of that?
You have a larger end-diastolic volume. So your heart now works as a volume pump. And so if you just do the math on end-diastolic volume and systolic volume for given resting cardiac output, you need to eject less of what's in the ventricle to achieve the same stroke volume.
Fascinating.
So these fluctuations of these numbers within the normal range can mean a lot of things. Further, the bane of the elderly woman is systolic hypertension. Systolic hypertension is associated with hyperdynamic left ventricles, stiff, small ejection fractions of their 70s. So I would worry as much or more about the woman with the 70% ejection fraction who is likely hypertensive as I would with the woman with an ejection fraction of 55%.
Dennis?
So it's almost a reverse think.
So I think, but Dr. Steingart makes a great point. I don't pretend to have any great sense of the cardiac physiology here, and I'm not a cardiologist. We've had people look at our data critically and follow along, and I think all the points he made are absolutely right on target. But I think that's why it was a controlled, randomized controlled trial. The non-trastuzumab arm, you would think, has the same mixture of, and we looked at age, we looked at various cardiac risk factors, and it was very well balanced. Yet the signal came up. So I think the signal's real, and what I've urged all along is exactly what you mentioned, was that we don't know what the long-term effect's going to be when these women enter their fifth, sixth, and seventh decade. It will be wonderful that we've induced a significant improvement in cure rates here. But if we swap one disease for another, we need to start to rethink it, unless we have no other options. If we had no other options, then I think this becomes a much less significant argument. But if there are other options, be it TCH, be it TC where the C is cytoxan, be it some of the navalbean-based regimens that can be looked at that were put together by Hal and his colleagues. That is what I think is the issue here. We've really made a significant impact on efficacy. What are we going to pay price-wise downstream?
But if I may say that one needs to think about this signal, and I agree with you entirely that the signal is clear, that the drug is associated with cardiac toxicity. However, within this normal range of ejection fraction, there are two populations of patients, one in which the fluctuation is occurring as a result of normal physiological variation, and one in which it's the consequence of the drug. So for any group of women in that range with that 15 EF fall, the number needed to harm is larger than it is when the EF starts dropping into the abnormal range. And so the question then becomes, what proportion of those women within the normal range are in fact experiencing cardiac toxicity, and what proportion are simply having the normal physiological variation that goes on within that range? And I don't know the answer to that.
No, and I think it's a very relevant point. I guess what I'm coming back to, and it's maybe that I don't understand all the nuances here, but you would think that the percentages of those people having normal variation within the range would be balanced in the three arms, so that it isn't a real signal in trastuzumab and anthracycline. And that's not what the data show. The data show that there is a differential, particularly when this drug is used with anthracycline, that is a fourfold increase in some level across 1,000 patient arms of left ventricular dysfunction. So I have to believe that that's real.
Yes.
What it means long-term, I think, is a whole other question. But I have to believe it's real.
Barbara?